Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 477. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Hi, everybody.
Jeff is here as well.
Hello.
Earl has rejoined us. Well, he was here last week, too.
Yeah, so. I was here last week. Yeah. I was going to say, though, how do you all have the Giggle Fest already? He's been drinking that
I told
much.
You I've been drinking all night.
Jeff has
you, okay, night. You have been drinking all night.
The it was the Irishman.
I was at a brew pub before. Stuff happened.
And we have special guest, friend of the show, Javi.
Hi.
The proprietor of Cryptbox Games.
That's right.
And stealer of our former co-host, Javi.
Stealer. Well, <all right. laughs> guilty. Guilty as charged.
So I don't really have a plan for tonight. It is our annual Thanksgiving drinking episode. But Javi has played a game that
you might need to drink to finish.
Maybe, I don't know. I have just started it, but Javi has finished Death Stranding. Javi, tell us about this experience.
Give it meaning, please.
Yeah, this is a tough one to talk about, especially if you like it as much as I did, because I'm not like, I don't know, like it's a game that, although I really enjoyed it, and especially I thought the ending, like, let's be clear, the ending is 2 hours long, and most of it's bad, but then it ends on a solid high note.
When you say the ending is 2 hours long, you do like a cutscene?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask too.
Yes, that's fair. Yes.
It's
that's a movie.
To be fair, it's not entirely cutscene. Like, it's cutscenes, like big long cutscenes, and then there's little bits of walking around and doing little things in there. But yeah, as like once you're strapped into the ride, it's 2 hours until credits. Actually, there's credits and there's another hour after the credits. So,
holy shit!
This is a Kojima-esque Kojima game right here. I remember beating Metal Gear Solid 4, and there was like 90 minutes of cutscene at the end of that thing.
That's exactly it. Like I was mid, you know, I was halfway through the ending, and I'm like, wow, this is Metal Gear Solid 4. But the difference here is that Death Stranding was an original IP and wasn't like bastardizing a franchise that meant the world to me. So Death Stranding, I have the ending in Death Stranding, I look at a little bit less angrily than I did MGS4. But no, I think that this game, in a strange way, I think it appealed to me because I'm such a fan of 3D platformers, which I know doesn't make a lot of sense because you don't really jump off platforms in Death Stranding, although you can try.
You can jump. You can jump.
You can jump. You can jump. And later on, you get the speed legs or whatever. You know how you can get like the legs that let you carry more cargo? There are legs that make you run super fast, and you can jump like maybe like 10 yards or something. It's pretty cool. And then there's also the legs that let you go uphill a lot faster and you trip less often. But anyways, I think that it ties into my affinity for that kind of game in that the entire, like all the mechanics in Death Stranding kind of support being mindful of your surroundings and understanding the limitations of your character. And then if you can figure that out, then and let it all kind of come naturally, then it's really satisfying to push it to the edge without falling on your face, literally, you know? And I guess the issue is that, like, the game is built very efficiently in that it's just copying and reusing more or less the same thing over and over again. Like, you deliver a package, and then it's, here's some more. Here's the next thing. Here's the next thing. Here's the next thing for 50 hours, you know? So it kind of struggles to have variety, but I think that the themes of the game kind of are baked into the way it feels to play it for such a long time. It does feel monotonous and lonely and exhausting, and you're like, I don't want to do that, but it's like Sam doesn't want to do it either, but it's important that you do. And the way characters I know so it's the kind of thing where like I can say that and I can hear someone groan and I totally get it. I totally understand how you're not going to waste your evening doing that shit. But for a certain type of person who's willing to, okay, I'll buy into this. Let's humor this game. And if it can click with you, I think it's really, really satisfying. I think it's really interesting. So I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about it.
So I've only played the first, hour and a half, finished the prologue and the first episode. I don't know. I'm intrigued. Let's put it that way. I don't really know what the fuck is going on. Like, I mean, it's some crazy ass storytelling early on, like, spoilers for the beginning of Death Stranding. Like, you're introduced early on to this character Sam. You know, he's the main character. You find out that your mom is the president of the United States. Also, yep. She's now dead, and you have to transport her corpse across to this like incinerator, because if you don't, then she becomes a bomb.
What?
So yeah. Well, if you don't mind, I'll kind of like explain why that, why that's it. Yeah, why that's that
art,
way,
please.
Why that's art?
Well, I don't know if we need that, but
yeah. In this world, this post Death Stranding world, like the Death Stranding is an event that happened that kind of fucked with reality and basically made it so the dead kind of bleed into our side of the world, and that's kind of what's going on with the weird ghost thingies with the handprints and stuff. Those are people on the other side.
Oh,
but anyways, what happens is when somebody dies now, that corpse needs to be burned, because basically if one of those BTs touches a dead body, basically it's polar opposites colliding, which causes a reaction, an explosive reaction, which causes a void out. That's what the game calls it, which is basically a nuclear explosion that leaves a giant crater and kills everybody within it. And so basically it's when somebody dies, it's very, very, very important. They have like dedicated teams to dispose of bodies. And so that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah. And also Sam can regenerate. Like it is a mechanic. It is a story beat in the game for this mechanic for you to die and come back to life.
Yes, Sam's uniquely gifted with dooms, which is like a weird genetic thing that has developed in people after the Death Stranding happened. And certain people can repatriate, which means come back from the dead. So like the other side is called the beach. Everybody has their own beach where they're ghosts or whatever. And Sam can kind of pull himself back into the real world and stick himself back into his body. So, yeah.
Okay. So what I played of it though, and like honestly, it's been about half cutscenes so far. But
yeah, enjoy them while they're there, because you're gonna have a whole lot of not cutscene for like 50 hours.
It's Metal Gear Solid 5.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like it starts out strong, and then it's like, here, play this game and do the same thing for 40 hours. Oh no.
Right. And I think that if you're feeling already kind of like tired of the slog, then just mainline it. Just only do missions with the star next to it.
I've only done like, you know, the two main missions that you have so far. Like I haven't picked up anything yet. I've just delivered the body. But I find the mechanics of it actually pretty interesting. Like you have to balance Sam. It's like if you go too far to the left or too far to the right, like he'll start shifting. And it's like they it's weird that it's like this is engaging that I'm like trying to balance him so I can get sure. to deliver this thing, but
yeah, I actually really found it interesting, and I appreciated them taking something so simple that happens in every video game, which is just walking around, and then making it kind of challenging to, or not challenging per se, but more like you need to really think about what you're stepping on and the angle of the hill that you're walking up. Like if you're walking up a really steep hill and then you kind of take a sharp turn left or right, your cargo is going to be like, oh shit. And it's going to start falling to the downwards down the hill. And you have to hold like the opposite trigger to kind of make sure that you stay standing up. Yeah, but like, I think that
like there's this cool thing with the physics of it, like where you're balancing everything as you're going along.
See, yeah, I do this all day at work, and
just, you're trying not to fall over at work.
Shit happens. Like, you actually have to be paying attention to what you're carrying, while at the same time, like you're always present of where your feet are going. Because no, for real, like you really have to constantly be scanning the ground ahead of you. I'm not joking. I'm being absolutely serious.
And do you have? Can you press something, Jeff, and it scans the terrain for you?
No, it's just I just have to do it with my brain on my own. But you know,
that's why you fall down so much.
Still slightly.
So Jeff, you are playing live action Death Stranding.
Yeah, I love it. Great way to make money, but you know,
I mean, laugh if you want. This game, like, I have a lot more respect for delivery people for sure. It's a thankless job. And Jeff, unlike Sam, you don't get a bunch of emails from every person you deliver to just thanking you profusely for how you've changed their lives. So
I have gotten at least one letter like that about that, like exactly like that. So
that's awesome. Actually, I love that.
But that's one out of you know, millions of deliveries at this point. So.
Right. And so that's another thing, though, is that like, I imagine a lot of players, most players even, because there's plenty of games where I don't go and read through all the documentation or of all the collectibles or whatever. But like, if you, and there's so much, like I was going to say, if you take the time to read most of them, because I haven't read them all either, because you're just constantly getting new emails and new data points. But if you like, it's kind of baked into the room where you rest, so you can turn on the music that you've unlocked and just chill. Like you're just relaxing. I'm going to burn through all these emails for the next hour or something, you know, just reading these stories. And they're really well written, and they add so much flavor and context to the world. Like you kind of get an idea of who these people are and the lives that they've been living, and kind of why it's so important to them that you were able to deliver something as simple as like a box of toys. Like it's really cool to like take that all in. It is also time consuming though, so I mean, what else is new, right?
I'm glad that something like this was able to get made, like, because sure, yeah. it is super high production value. Like, yeah, you have big name actors like Mads Mikkelsen and Norman Reedus and Guillermo del Toro. Like it's insane that this game about balancing packages and delivering them across terrain was able to be made, like, and look this great. Like it's just a fascinating thing. We'll see where I end up with it, but
yeah,
right now I'm at least intrigued.
Well, I think that's a good place to be, and that's a good attitude to have. I mean, like, you know what you're getting into, and it's up to you how much you want to tolerate. but like I said, it is rewarding for those who are kind of open to it. I think it's got a lot of very interesting ideas and themes that it's exploring. I like that it's at the same time, it's kind of harshly criticizing social media and how it's affected people, while it's also kind of exploring a world where currency doesn't exist, and literally the way that people reward you or pay you is with likes, with the thumbs up. It's like a Facebook like, and like that is the currency. You don't really spend it, but it's kind of like that's the capital. It's social capital, literally. You know, I think that that's really interesting.
I haven't encountered it yet. Although I guess like they introduced me to like some very simple things. Like I found a rope. Like, oh, you can like this rope that was left here.
Right.
To climb up or this ladder. But from other people I know that have played it, like they've spent time like building roads. And then, like, that shows up in other people's games and like that, mm-hmm. they get likes and then it can like become like a permanent fixture or something in the game, I guess. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like different structures can be upgraded and it takes a lot of materials and stuff. And so if you have a really helpful bridge, let's say, and you're like, I don't want this bridge to deteriorate over time. I want to make sure it's super strong. And then also you can upgrade it to where you can have cool holograms and music of your choice playing out of it. And so you can have other people, and you can also help upgrade other people's bridges and stuff. And it does have this sense of community of like, we're all in this together and we're helping each other out. I don't know. I think that element is super cool, and it does a great job of making you feel what it's like when you're in an area that's not connected to the network. Like every time you move beyond the space that you're I guess that you've conquered already, there's no connection to the network, so you can't build any structures, you don't see anything that anybody's left. It's just kind of a all natural wasteland, right? And you're totally on your own and your batteries are running out and it's kind of dangerous. But then once you find the person that lives there on that patch of land and you connect them to the network, then just boom, instantly everything lights up. It's like somebody turned on all the lights and you're seeing all these structures people have built. And it's kind of like, oh, this is what the point of the game is. We all have to come together. We all have to work together, rebuild the country. So I think it's cool.
Yeah, it is certainly something different. Tony, it does not sound at all like a game for you.
So. No, I don't think I'll be playing that one.
Yeah, and I wouldn't recommend it if it sounds bad.
I'm still getting over the 2-hour finale. That just saved me.
Dude, oh, you know what? I made a tweet, and I really stand by it, especially after beating the game. I made a tweet that's like, will you enjoy Death Stranding? And I had a couple examples in there. And I think the two main ones that are most apt are, did you enjoy Final Fantasy 15? And did you enjoy The Last Guardian? Because The Last Guardian was, you were constantly fighting the controls, and the game lived or died by whether or not you got attached to the adorable NPC that was stuck with you through the whole game. If you never got attached to the baby, and if you never got attached to that bird creature, you're not going to like Death Stranding or Last Guardian. It's very similar in that sense. And then Final Fantasy 15 was all about big, giant, beautiful vistas with not much to do inside of them, and you're constantly traveling on foot, and it's up to you whether or not you're jiving with what the game has to offer. So
I weirdly liked both of those games.
So you might like it. I think that you have a strong chance of liking it.
I think I thought both of those games were okay. You know, like I wasn't like super high on either of them, but I thought they're fine.
I like Final Fantasy 15 way more than Last Guardian, but I think they both, I don't know. I value both of them for trying what they tried.
You've been playing anything else? I mean, that was like a 50-hour game that you put time into, so...
Yeah, unfortunately, it took me off of Luigi's Mansion, and then I've been sprinkling a little bit of Pokemon in there. So now I'm excited to fully get back to both of those. Pokemon is fine. It's Pokemon. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know what you're going to get after...
Which is a shame. Sandwiches. I think that for the first console Pokemon game, they had an opportunity to go all out.
Like, reimagine it. Like,
yes. Do a Breath of the Wild. Make a Pokemon game that no one expected. But, I mean, we all knew.
I guess.
Yeah.
People always say that. And I guess the counter to me is always like, what? Because, like,
I think there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, I've only played. This is only my second Pokemon game, and it feels like a retread, and I like it. Don't get me wrong. But like,
I'm not going to say that Pokemon isn't the same thing as it was with Red and Blue as it is in Sword and Shield. My point is, like, people say that, but there's like no other example to be like, this is what I want this game to be.
Oh, people have made plenty of people have made
people have made examples. But
how about like smart AI that's not just randomly picking moves? Like that seems like fun, right?
Okay, to me, ultimately, it's kind of the Star Wars problem. It's Pokemon is a franchise for kids, and I assume the assumption is always going to be that the people you're playing it are people who started for the first time.
I think that's an excuse, dude.
Yeah,
Mario's a franchise for kids. Yeah, and Odyssey was awesome. Like,
Odyssey was awesome, but all the 2D games are pretty much the same setup as the original Mario Brothers.
Well, then they made Mario Odyssey, which was not a 2D game.
I guess there's a ton of Pokemon games that are not Pokemon RPG. But I mean,
those are terrible. They're all bad.
I don't think they're all bad.
My Rome.
Look, I
mean, Snap? You don't like Snap?
Oh, Snap. Come on, Snap's great.
Okay.
I mean, they're not all terrible.
Then you can't.
every other one's terrible.
Well, I don't know about every. There are some good side games, I think, and some interesting things they've done with the franchise. But you know, I get the frustration with it, especially with a lot of people anticipating this being the first Pokemon, like the first actual Pokemon RPG on consoles. Expectations were high, and it is still Pokemon. I think there's a lot of change. There's changes that I think are interesting for the franchise, but those were more like I've been with the SIS franchise since day one. So like I have seen the Pokemon in the overworld, and that's not like a huge change for people, but it is a nice change. And I understand it's not like even back in the GameCube days, I remember people envisioning Pokemon as like this MMO that would be like a WoW contender or something like that. And I just don't think that's ever been their grand vision for this franchise.
No, an MMO is very different from, but you know, it's similar to like everybody was really frustrated with 3D Zelda since Ocarina of Time. Like, it's just the same game.
No, they weren't.
It's just the same game. Nobody was.
Well, I'm not saying that nobody was. No, I'm not saying people weren't, but I'm also saying that people were people say that, and then Twilight Princess, Wind Waker, Skyward Sword are all high 80s, low 90 review scores. It's not like people were like, these are terrible games.
Nobody said they were terrible games. And nobody's saying that Sword and Shield are terrible games. But I'm saying that, like, Zelda had a formula since Link to the Past, really. And Breath of the Wild flipped that table. And I'm just saying that if you're saying, what did you expect Pokemon to be? And Pokemon can't be anything else. Like, no, that's not true. Like, Pokemon can be...
I don't really think I'm saying that it can't be something else. But it's like, what exactly do people want out of it? Like, we want our Breath of the Wild moment, but what is that? Like,
honestly, it's something different, something new.
But okay, but saying something different, saying something new, isn't saying anything. Like, they could make this where you have one partner Pokemon and you go through the entire game. That's something different and new. That's what I'm getting at. It's like everybody has a different idea of what they want that to be.
Yeah, but this is the first time that the fan base is kind of also joining people that are like, Pokemon has never changed. Where like fans have always been like, well, I don't. And obviously everybody bought it. Anyways. But like,
I was about to say, there's a vocal minority of people who are saying that. Because it seems most people who bought the game are enjoying it for what it is.
You can enjoy it for what it is. I'm enjoying it for what it is. But it's not very ambitious.
I don't think anybody's saying that.
So, I mean,
I'm with it. Is it like it should be like that's what I would like to see. Like,
everybody says that, but I'm not saying. No, I'm just trying to say that it's not that I don't understand. I understand people's frustrations with this game not changing. If you played Red and Blue, Golden, any generation, this is pretty much the same Pokemon game. The same 8 gyms, the same badges, the same, you know, same random creatures to collect and everything. I'm not disagreeing that this franchise hasn't evolved a ton. I'm just saying, I think when people say they want it, no pun, I think when people are saying, because like, okay, I mentioned this last week, There's been a ton of games that have come out that have tried to modernize or take Pokemon in different directions. You had World of Final Fantasy. You had Monster Hunter Stories. You've had Digimon, Monster Ranchers. There's a bunch of mobile knockoffs. And there's a reason none of those have caught on. It's because they take the games in different ways that apparently doesn't resonate with fans. And it's not like franchises that don't have a big audience. Final Fantasy and Monster Ranchers have huge RPG roots. So you can't just... So it's not like... They're not
mainline Pokemon games.
No, but that's what I'm saying, though. It's like Breath of the Wild, for example. Like Breath of the Wild is a reimagining the Zelda, but it does take a lot of stuff that was already kind of popular in gaming at that time. The whole open world, go anywhere, do anything dynamic.
Okay, well, like, why can't you do that in Pokemon?
But what do you want out of a JRPG at that level, Jeff?
Pokemon going to copy, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, first of all, I agree with what Javi was saying, but like the thing I was thinking of, like right before he said his analogy, I was thinking of like Tomb Raider, how like Tomb Raider just did like an overhaul, like it just looks better, yeah. It plays better. Like, what if it just had better graphics? It looks good, but like
it looks good enough.
What if it went in a more realistic direction, like with the graphics, or like
that defeats the purpose of what the franchise is.
I'm not saying that's the only thing, but I'm just saying like. Reimagine it like a little bit,
like Sword and Shield's art style it works. It looks nice.
I also
it does look like a 3DS game that's a little bit upscaled.
I think it's Sun and Moon.
Yeah, exactly. So a good kind of example of how to show a little bit more ambition and a little bit like taking this seriously as a console Pokemon game is you shouldn't be walking up to big interesting structures out in the open world and like there's nothing to do with any of them. There's just little sparkles on the ground that might be a rare candy or might be a leaf stone. Like, why aren't there actually interesting areas to go to and explore? There's not. It's everything's very linear, and the open world in the middle kind of tantalizes you and teases at something being a little different and ambitious and big, but it's kind of not, you know.
So isn't the Pokemon company like a conglomerate of, because it's not just Nintendo, right? Like
it's not really Nintendo. That's
Nintendo, Game Freak, and isn't there? There's another company involved.
The Pokemon company, but I think Game Freak owns it, or I don't know.
The Pokemon company controls the IP, and so it's kind of like it's a thing that was made up to control the IP itself. Nintendo publishes it, but they don't necessarily have any say in the games, which is why a lot of the times their Pokemon games are just kind of announced whenever the hell they want it to be. This is different, but like I believe it's Black and White that came out at the end of the 3DS lifespan, like a month before the 3DS came out. And it's like, if you're a Nintendo, you're like, we have a Pokemon game, why not push it to launch? And at the time, the Pokemon company's like, this is what we're doing. Or I guess a more recent example is that there's a reason like none of the Pokemon amiibos work with Mario Maker. It's because the Pokemon company wouldn't allow them to use it.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm just wondering like how much like politics goes in with those. Game Freak, Creatures, and Nintendo all have some sort of stake in it in Japan. I just wonder how much politics there is that goes into like, hey, this is how far we can push it. Before it starts being, well, we need to make sure we make X amount of dollars on this, so we can't push it too far, because we go too far one way, what if it doesn't work? And we know that this works this way. We know that we're going to get X amount of sales from releasing Pokemon.
Yeah, all their releases are incredibly conservative and like staying within that structure. Like, they're not going to step too far away from what they've done before. I wish they would. I think it'd be nice if, or maybe even like keeping it within the structure, but also going all out in other places, whether it be graphics or like composed music. Like, that would be pretty cool. The music in Sword and Shield is really cool. It's good music. They didn't really spend a lot of money recording it, but
I would love
how about some actual voices.
Yeah, the voices is where like it kind
of. Yeah, it's. It's really weird in Sword and Shield because they have such animated characters and they're not saying anything. I'm like, this is really strange because you're talking. Like on the handheld, like it made no difference because you didn't really see them. But you have like the Mr. Rose, whatever his name is, Chairman Rose. Like he gives this big speech and I'm like, this is really weird that there's like not even like audible sound because like Nintendo sometimes does that gibberish with Mario and Zelda.
Yeah, because it's kind of just a 3DS game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of disappointing. That's all I'm saying.
I get people's disappointment with it. I'm just saying that I've been around the Pokemon franchise for forever, and everybody wants it to evolve and change. But it's like one of those things where like, you ask 10 people, you'll get 100 different ideas on what they should do. And it's like Jeff brought up Tomb Raider. I think Tomb Raider is an interesting comparison. The flip side to that was the third Tomb Raider reboot, and the reason they kept on rebooting is sales decline, where like, Pokemon has been a consistent 15 million seller for the past
forever. And what Tomb Raider rebooted to was they took the, you know, they took Uncharted and like modified it. They did. Like, they're Uncharted.
I'm not saying that they didn't, but it's like, it's kind of it's like a back and forth dance,
Like Uncharted took elements of Tomb Raider, but the Tomb Raider reboot then like took like, hey, we're gonna go like a little more.
They're going like, hey, we're gonna pay attention to what happened in this genre, and we're gonna try to like do like.
Well, and that's the thing, like, you know what I mean? Like what is happening in the JRPG genre? Like, I don't see a lot of movement.
There. I don't know. Final Fantasy 15 was dope.
Sure, but also like, I mean, I liked Final Fantasy 15, but you talk to a lot of Final Fantasy fans, are like, that game was shit, and they've been saying that for the last decade now, since like 13. Almost two decades. Like it's been since 10 where they're everything is bad about this.
I don't feel any risk in them swinging for the fences of Pokemon because it's going to sell no matter what.
It sells no matter what once though. But if you fuck that up,
they're not going to. I mean, try harder. You know what I mean? Like,
copy what? But I guess that's like, what are you copying? Because I mean, again, it's not like they don't try stuff with the franchise, just not the core games. Like we've had stuff like Pokemon Conquest, which was the strategy RPG they did.
Yeah, that's a different thing. Like, I'm saying, try something with the main thing. Like, just overhaul it. Like.
What do you want overhaul?
Like the core game is you catch monsters.
I've said several things. I think you could try to re-envision how it looks. You can make it more open world. You could have a better map. Like, dude, just little things.
I'm like, what exactly do you do on like the look side? Like, I get like you can do better visuals, but like you don't go too far on the realistic side because. It kind
of
has
no, this tie-in with there's how that... There's plenty of cartoony games, though, that look fucking fantastic and almost look photoreal in their own way, even though they're cartoony.
You can't do photoreal with Pokemon.
Photoreal, but you can do anime. Okay? You can do... Dragon Ball game. But you look
anime. Think of how good something like the Ori and the Blind Forest looks. Like, just try.
To Chris's point, the example I would put out of my is something like, and again, you have these designers, and I think of something like PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. The more realistic you get, the more odd it would be that a lot of these creatures should not work really in the same world, because a lot of them are really goofy and stupid, but it works because it's Pokemon and the art style. Like, right now, my team has like a grass type that is like a ninja. There's an ice cream cone. There is and a lot of that stuff is fine because the style is just so basic that you don't pay attention. The more realistic you get, the more you kind of, like, it's kind of like Detective Pikachu, where there were some designs that really worked and there were some designs people thought were nightmares. And I thought that was a really good depiction of some of the realistic styles, but some of those, like, the monkey Apon did not get great in that movie. That was frightening stuff.
Okay, I haven't seen the movie, but I saw the trailer of that. But that, I think that's like a good example of like it looks cartoony, but it looks fucking like 3D and it looks good. You know what I mean? Like,
and the Switch isn't going to run that.
The Switch could do better visuals. I mean, I think that Pokemon Sword is the one I'm playing. Like, I think it looks fine, but I'm just saying, dude, it feels like it's due for fucking, like, let's try to redo this from scratch.
I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that point. I think the point that we're disagreeing on is there's one thing to say, like, it needs a change. It's another thing to be like, what is that change? Like, even if it has a different graphical style, that's not really changing the core format, which is what a lot of people have issues with. Like, to me, I think that's more of the, like, it's a simple setup, but it's still kind of like, start this game, you start in your hometown, you meet your rival, your best friend, whatever, you go to this somebody's house, you get your one of your starters, you learn how to catch Pokemon, you catch a bunch of them, you do a gym, you're introduced to that system, there's 8 of them. Somewhere between 4 and 5, you take a sidetrack because there's some story elements that they have to deal with. Go back to 5, 6, 7, 8. You finish that Pokemon League Elite 4. You become champion. Game over.
Spoilers. Just...
it's the same for every game, Jeff.
So, well, I've never beaten one, so thanks for learning.
I mean, if you
Javi
sounds
auto. I'm not sure what you did.
Okay, you broke up like for me.
You sounded like a crazed robot there for a second. All right. Well, yeah. So Pokemon due for a change. We're not sure what. Jeff would like Freak Nightmare Pokemon.
Yes.
He probably would.
And a better map.
I do think the map's a little, it like throws me off because it's like you're either here or there on the map, and it's just like.
Yeah, I wish it was a little more direct. Like
I wish it was a map of Europe. Like, I hate Asia.
Oh, you're in the town. Okay, the town is like fucking a bunch of like intersections and shit. I would like to like see that. Like, what the fuck? Anyways.
I mean, most towns aren't that big. It's not that hard.
I know,
hard to
man. We just fuck it again. Like, it's just funny, like, though, it ain't hard. Every other game does this shit. Like, come on.
Well, what's funny about that is I'm replaying A Link to the Past, and the map there, like, kind of gives you exact location.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's not that much bigger than a Pokemon map.
Like, I mean, I guess that I will honestly say that has never crossed my mind because, like, most of the towns.
I get it, dude, but it's just
there's only like one way in or one way out. Like,
there's 3 buildings you need to know in any Pokemon town.
I like my markers. I like to know where things are. Yeah, I like to know where I am. I like looking at maps. It's a big part of my games. Don't take that away from me. Like the map is just like not a map. It's like looking at a bus map. It's like, okay,
yeah,
that's exactly what it is.
That's exactly it. Because it's that point. To Chris's point, there's a way into town and there's usually a way out of town, and that's the town. That's all you need to know.
I think we need real maps.
Do you know where the entrance is, Jeff? The exit's on the opposite side.
Yeah, see, I don't like that. I need real maps with, like, I need to see all the veins of the city. I don't like.
So you want GTA GPS?
Yes.
With like a little arrow driving you there.
I mean, that'd be a start. It'd be a fucking start.
I mean, but again, I just finished the first. I just got my first badge while we were recording this. I finished that, so it's kind of the second town you go to. There's 3 buildings you can actually enter in that town. Like, what would the map show you?
All that.
Jeff's getting turned around somewhere in the town, so he needs to know exactly where he is.
I like
he needs
to see
that you are here.
Which direction I'm facing? Like, I don't. I just appreciate that shit. Like, I enjoy scanning maps. I do. Now, that's like a big thing in games for me.
So, I mean, Jeff, they could give you the route map. They give you that bus map, or you could have the map in Jedi Fallen Order.
That's what I'm saying. God. Like, that models itself after Metroid Prime. I like that type of map a lot.
It's a fucking nightmare. I can't find anything.
Where's the objective? Where am I? I can't.
Well, that's the only, that you know, I think that
those are the only things that matter.
that map, we could get into that, but like that map, if the whole map was revealed to you, it would be awesome. But like, that's like the only way they keep mystery in the game is by like.
Well, I don't mind that. It's looking at it though. Point that's not on the map. Which is great that first time you're going through. Oh, okay. So like over here is like there's two exits here I haven't explored. But once you come back, it's like, what the fuck? How do I find anything on this map? It's a goddamn nightmare.
I just like when it's not filled in yet, sometimes like you're like, oh, I see where I have to go. Like it shows you a marker, right?
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you have to go down to get up, you know what I mean? Where it's like you think you just have to run towards the marker, but sometimes you have to, like, you got to figure out the path and the level to get there. You know what I mean? Like, that's a tough thing about the map, but it's just, I think that's the way they add, like, challenge to the game, like, where it's like.
It's just a multi level 3D image of the map. Like, it just makes it a little bit difficult trying to navigate it. And
like, once that map is filled out, to me, that's like. That reminds me of the Metroid Prime map, which is my favorite type of map in a game, where it's like 3D. You look at it, you see where you are, you see where you have to go, and it's like
that's the thing. When you're returning, if you don't have a location that you need to return, so like if you're just going and like, oh, I know there was a secret here that I couldn't get to before. How do I get back there? The map is virtually useless for that. Like,
yeah,
it's like yes, if like
that's why you need like. Those Breath of the Wild markers where you could place a marker on the map or whatever, you know, like that would be nice.
Right. Like any sort of like waypoint that you could like put yourself, like it would have helped in Jedi Fallen Order. Cause like once you kind of complete that map, if you want to go back and, you know, grab some of the unlockables, which generally aren't important unless you're like going for the stim packs, which I found valuable. Jeff obviously did not. He did not get any of them.
I didn't find them at all. So,
and you didn't explore a whole lot either.
I guess I didn't. Like, because like
you missed that Star Destroyer. You missed the Ventor class Star Destroyer on the second planet you go to. There's like a whole Star Destroyer you can explore, and. If you had done that, you would have got a stim pack. At the end, there was a stim pack there.
Yeah, I guess because I thought I was like checking nooks and crannies at the very least because I kept finding all these chests that were worthless. But
they are pretty worthless.
I thought only in like the last 2 hours or so did I feel like I was rushing through the game in any sort of way. I don't know. I am going to replay the game, obviously. I liked it a lot, so I will replay it at some point, and maybe I'll try to play it a little different. Because you said you were like kind of going exploring on your own outside of the... Like, I just followed the story straight. It just felt like one of those games to me.
Yeah, and I mean, there were definitely things, though, that I saw on planets, and I'm like, oh, if I return here, like the ball puzzle on the first planet, like where the temple is. Like I knew that it was there because I found it the first time I was on the planet, but I couldn't do it because I didn't have force push at the time. And so like as you get more of your force powers, the double jump, the force pull, the push, it unlocks other areas for you to kind of go back and explore. But the story doesn't necessarily always push you in that direction.
No, I mean, it makes it just felt like a very linear, like I knew I could go, I knew I technically could go, well, I could go to this planet where the mission is not at, but I was just like, I don't know, this seems like a straightforward, like, 3D adventure game, like, not like, I have to go do, like, I don't know, I mean, again, I realized that you could do that always in, like, any game like this, but, I guess I should have done it more because all I ever found when I explored was like lightsaber skins and shit. Like,
literally, that's all that is in those regular the white. Yeah. Chests. It's these special yellow chests that have the stim packs, and then
But like that stuff was sometimes tucked away where, or like where you'd have to do like a platforming like thing to get to it, and you're like, oh, that's all I got was that.
Got the shitty lightsaber hilt.
So I was like, the fact that there's like things that are even more hidden, like is like really surprising to me. So, but I guess I mean, again, like I said, I will be replaying the game. So
yeah, I'll replay it at some point. Tony, you won't be. You might not even be finishing it.
I don't think we get that far.
What?
I really want to try Control, and this game's going to take up a lot of my time, and it just seems mediocre. It seems aggressively mediocre.
I would not agree with that at all.
If there was like some element of the game that was particularly compelling, sure. There's not. There's just nothing that's awesome.
I don't get it. It has elements of, I mean, I think the production values are pretty great.
Production values are fine. It looks
mostly
good.
I think some of the graphics, I think.
And the Wookiees don't look great.
I don't think not just the Wookiees. It's just like sometimes the game looks a little washed out to me. But I thought that like the gameplay in general was really good. So like I don't know. Like it's a mishmash. It's like a greatest hits of things I really love. Like, so I don't know.
Yeah, like what I liked about it was the kind of like Tomb Raider platforming stuff.
Mm-hmm. That stuff's fun. You have really good combat.
I hate the combat. I think the combat is bad. It's cheap at points.
Oh my god.
I like there are points where you'll come across the purge troopers that have the purple like shock batons and stuff.
I know. I hate those motherfuckers. I was bitching about it last week. I think.
But you can't like there are if they get into a chain and you get hit, you cannot get out of it. And there are parts where you cannot block stuff of theirs at all, and it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, it's like it sucks when you like get stuck in this animation where you've like fallen down, and you're trying to get back up, and you're like, "God damn it, dude! This guy's like."
And then, the fuck out of me. I don't think it would be as much of an issue if like when I tap the button to get a stim, if he would do it, like if I get interrupted, like I tell BD to get a stim, Cal goes through like, "All right, buddy, I need some help." And then, like, I end up having to dodge. Well, yep. Guess what? BD forgot to give me the stim, and now I have to do it again. It's like, and that takes some extra time. Like, just fucking do it. It's extra frustrating when I was fighting the second sister towards the end of the game.
That is how it is in like Dark Souls, though. It's like you have to have time to drink your Estus flask. Like, if you get hit like in the middle of drinking it, like, you know,
which is fine, but. Like, I've told my droid, give me the fucking stim. Just give it to me.
Give it to me.
It's not like, I understand in Dark Souls, like, hey, I need to take a step back, drink my flask. That's a motion. Like, I already told my fucking droid, give me the stim, motherfucker. Give it to me. It's like, I have a droid that is carrying the back to stims. Give them to me.
Okay, so are you falling, like, on Tony's side on this? Like, I'm like,
I think the combat's bad. Like, I think that I really like the game a lot. I do not like the combat at all.
Javi, don't listen to these people. Have you not played? Javi, have you played this? Are you here?
It's I'm here. it's on my to-do list. I just need to beat Luigi's Mansion first. But
don't listen to these guys. I think you'll like it more than they are.
I think I will, too. I like video games.
I really like this game, and I will play it. Is I think it's an excellent Star Wars game, but there are issues with it. I
would put that as one of the I would say graphics more than anything with the game, because it looks weird to me at points. Like, I don't know, like it looks bland for like the budget of that game. I don't know.
Which parts look bland to you? Like Dathomir's
the character
to kind of look
models,
lost
their faces.
I think that Sira, whatever the Jedi Master who's like blocking herself off from the Force for most of the game.
I think she's one of the better looking.
I think she looks terrible. Her face is all fucked up, but I love like the pilot guy. I think Cal is, I don't like him at all, but I didn't like him as a character. I think BD looks great. I think the Night Sister is pretty cool looking. I like the Second Sister, what she looks like.
But the art direction and shit is awesome. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think BD-1 is an awesome character. I think, right? That's his name, right?
Yep.
I think, yeah, the Night Sister looks, like, the way, like, her costume looks and shit is awesome. I just think the graphics themselves, like, there was moments when the game could look good, but it mostly went to, like, the art direction. And, like, something flat about the graphics to me. I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I thought it looked Star Wars-y to me.
I mean, it looks Star Wars. I mean, I don't know. But I'm just amazed that you guys both are just, like, so down on the combat, because I thought it, you know, was really good. I thought, like, the game in general, like, I don't have a lot of huge complaints about that game.
Well, I think you're naturally attuned to like that combat too. Like,
it's
Dark Souls type combat, which Tony and I do not like.
But it's, oh, okay. Now I feel better.
Yeah. See, you know what I'm saying?
But it's also, it's not even good. I don't think it's even, I don't think it's good Dark Souls.
I think when was the last time you guys played Force Unleashed? Because that's some garbage.
That's got to work on that though.
It's so bad. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, that first game is God of War, like original trilogy God of War hack and slash.
Yeah.
Like, it's not nuanced. It's like, I don't really think this has a whole lot of nuance either. It's one, like, there's a block button and there's a light attack and a heavy attack. And then what makes it nuanced is the force powers. Like,
the force powers, and you got to roll. And
but, like, just like, yeah, I don't know.
I think simplicity isn't always a bad thing. I think in a lot of times having just like three things to do, but like making sure that you have enemies that get the most out of it is, and I haven't played it, so I don't know what I'm talking about, but in concept, the concept of only having a couple things to do, that doesn't really turn me off.
I mean, there are things about it I like the lightsaber, like blocking laser bolts, like doing the timing on that, I think is really cool. And being able to deflect them back. I'm not a fan of the melee combat though, like one on one. And I feel that some of the bosses get like super fucking cheap. They get into like these like ultra hit combos that you can dodge, but if they hit you once, like they're going to take off three quarters of your life bar. Like, fuck that. I'm playing on normal. Like,
did you play Sekiro earlier this year?
No, fuck that game.
Oh, man. Okay.
I played it.
Because you just described, like, everything in that game.
Yep. And that, no, I absolutely know I would not want to play that.
Like, I was super into it. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's, like, a block meter or whatever. You hit them multiple times, and you'll stagger them and get a couple extra hits on them. And I think on like regular enemies, it's fine. It's just like once you start getting to the bosses and stuff, like this taking too long. My force powers don't work against some of them at all, which just means then you're just doing melee combat that I don't think is necessarily all that good. But everything else except for the sliding, hated that too. but everything else I kind of liked.
Okay, all right. We talked about this last week, Javi, but like, back me up on this. And like, 3D platformers and shit, do not love the fucking part where you're like surfing down a hill or some shit. Like, there's tons of that in this game. Like, it's okay.
Fucking awesome. I love it. I love it once a game in a sequence that I will never ever play again.
I fucking love that shit, dude. And this game does it over and over.
Oh, it's way too much. Like, every fucking map has one of these, and.
I guess it depends. It depends of the, because like I'm thinking of like Uncharted games. When they do that, it's not super exciting. It's also kind of slow in those games. But then like
it tends to suck. There was a sequence in Shadow with a Tomb Raider that was.
Oh, I never played that.
But. Same thing.
Mario 64. I'm just saying a little game. Game. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there like down the.
Well, I've heard of that one.
And, you know.
Yeah, but that's one time, Jeff. I'm like, I don't. I'm like just that saying, though, but anyway,
like my favorite thing, and they do it a bunch.
way too much.
Which part of Mario 64?
The ice level.
Mario 64. I don't remember that. Like, do you, what exam? What's your exam? Oh, yeah, the penguin slide. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but that's race. Different because that's an actual. That's designed to be a race. It's not like a feature. Yeah, that's why I don't think of Mario 64 as that. Like, I'm thinking of the examples of
So the Prince of Persia reboot where you have to slide down some gravel. I don't know.
I was thinking of the example in I think it's Uncharted 2 when the building's collapsing and he's kind of falling through and you have to like eat from building to building as it's falling down.
Kind of like a left and right.
Like and if you like, mistime it, it's like everything screwed up and you have to do it again. And
I don't know.
Like,
it's fun.
Just like that's
if
fun.
You fly too far to the left or too far to the right.
All right, Jeff. I've got your positive example. That big extended sequence with the music swelling in Journey when you're going down the sand and it's all just sliding downhill. There you go.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Once, but that's once.
But you're not. I can't believe you're not going to back me up on this. It's just
no, like thing. I'll back you up in that. That's a game mechanic that you enjoy, and that's awesome.
Oh my god!
Tag somebody in, and they stabbed you in the back.
So I have a fellow like platformer fan here, also saying nope.
I just don't have like examples of that are like particularly meaningful to me. Like I said, the examples I listed
of Mario
Uncharted
64 is nothing to you.
Dude, Mario 64 is the shit.
That's not really what Mario 64 is doing.
I'm saying it does it, and like. This has like it's like that stupid thing. Like look, Zelda does it in one of them too, doesn't it? Like where you jump on your shield and go fucking like racing downhill. Yeah,
Tony said it's once. It happens once, not every fucking level that has.
I know, but what I'm saying is why not more?
Because like, dude, it's so bad.
How about this? If I pick up Fallen Order in December and then get these like flashbacks of Mario 64, I will come on this podcast and apologize.
You're not going to back me up on this because like I can tell because it's like it's one of those things where like every time it pops up in the game, I'm like, I love that. Like it's like one of my kinks, I guess. And fucking
Like Jeff, the first time it happened, I was like, "Yeah, this is pretty cool." But then, like, it happened again, and I slid off the fucking map and died. And then, like, it just kept rebooting me. And if I couldn't hit it, like, I couldn't hit the fucking rope, and I died there. And then I like slid off the other side, and I had to take a stim doing the fucking ride.
I never like that's the one thing too. Like, I never had that problem. Maybe because I love this shit so much. Like I'm so into it, maybe I like replay it in those games. Like I don't know.
I'm just so good, dude. I'm
so good at sliding levels. It's like Jeff's no, like, a I'm sliding level guy.
Hopefully they're platforming solid.
Like, idiot savant with fucking
sliding.
I can't wait till like next gen where it's like where I can just hey Jeff, I got one of these sliding situations. I'm gonna give you control of my game. You beat it for me because I'm done with it.
You can't do that now? I thought you could do that.
I think you can do it with PlayStation. I don't know if you can do it with Xbox or not.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just transfer it over to Jeff. Jeff, handle the sliding section for me. Anybody else play anything?
I beat this. This is kind of not an older game, but not new. You guys heard of Blasphemous?
Yeah. Yes.
Dude, that game is awesome.
You beat it?
I did. It was brutal. It's basically just Dark Souls in a Castlevania package, which is kind of everything I ever wanted. It's not as like super like Bloodborne-y gothic horror stuff, but it's very, very graphic. I don't know if any of you play that?
I have not played it yet. It's the one with like you play like an Inquisitor or something, right? Like has major religious themes or something.
Definitely. It's soaked in it. Like every person and thing in the game is part of this religion, and the religion's all about guilt and about like there's like being guilty and punishing yourself is what it's all about. That's what you're supposed to do. And so like your character is called the Penitent One. And he just goes around just
wrecking shit. I don't know. It's very fun, but it's also like comes with a big warning of there's lots of nudity and lots of gore. So be prepared for that. But it was satisfying. It was a short little game though. It wasn't like as robust as a full blown 2D Castlevania. But I enjoyed my time with it, and it was challenging, very, very tough.
How's the combat Castlevania ish or?
So you just have the one weapon, right? And you gain like different magical powers that you can kind of supplement with. Some of them are buffs and some of them just are like calling down lightning that covers the screen or whatever. But yeah, it's more or less the same combat throughout, and it's just, you have one attack. It's just attack, but you can like jump up and then hold down and lets you kind of pogo on enemies. You have a block and you have a counter. And you have to time the counter right. And if you do that, then the enemies will flash red, and then you can hit them with a devastating attack that's like super violent. Sometimes you just like rip them in half or do all sorts of crazy stuff. It's all pixel art, but it's like really insanely animated, like hyper animated. I don't even know. Have you guys seen that game Slain? It's like a heavy metal.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's the same team that did that. So okay. Expect that kind of graphic. It's cool. Nice. Yeah, it was a nice little surprise in October, like early October, and it was perfect for that.
Maybe I will get to that at some point.
It was on sale.
Was it? Is it part of the Black Friday sale, Jeff? Or?
I forgot on which shop or what, but yeah, I remember seeing it was on sale. Somewhere. I don't remember sale being particularly great either. Like, it was like $5 off or whatever, but... Yeah. I thought about it though because I remember seeing that game when, like, it didn't get a lot of hype or whatever anything, like when it came out, but like it looked cool. Like, I remember seeing the trailer, I was like, that looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, it just kind of dropped. I never saw anybody talk about it, but I gave it a shot, and I give a lot of games a shot, honestly. If I see something that mildly looks interesting, I'll pick it up and then maybe get around to checking it out.
Yeah.
But like, that was one of the rare games where I started playing it and I really didn't stop until I finished it, which was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So last week we were going to talk about the most.
Oh, wait. Before we talk about that, it's the only piece of news that I had, and it's not really news, but I figured we'd talk about it anyhow. There was an interview with Phil Spencer this week where he commented on the fact that VR was not going to be a focus or a part of the Xbox Scarlet.
Thank God.
Yes. So, essentially,
I wouldn't say thank God. I think VR is cool.
I would say thank God, but here's what he said. I have some issues with VR. It's isolated, and I think of games as a communal kind of together experience. We're responding to what our customers are asking for, and nobody's asking for VR. The vast majority of our customers know if they want a VR experience, there's places to go get those. We see the volume of those on PC and other places.
Yeah.
What places is he referring to? Just kidding.
Which, I mean, PlayStation probably has the most accessible VR, right? Like, it's the cheapest headset out there. Is
yep.
it? Yeah.
It's pretty cheap now, too.
Yep.
Is it cheap? I mean, like, for Black Friday, but I mean, in general, it's still. Like,
I've seen it on sale a lot for like $200 and shit. Like,
yeah, which I mean, kind of goes to his point.
I mean, it's what? Like, the base price of that's what, $300?
Yeah.
That's what it usually is.
I paid $5 and I sold it like a year later.
Which may play into his point as well.
No, it would like, let's be real, it would be really foolish. It would be a foolish business decision to like try to go all in on VR at this stage. Like, it's just like we saw all these companies go all in on VR and it just kind of petered out. It's still going, but not really. There's not a lot of momentum or excitement there. It's just kind of there.
Yeah.
I think it needs to remove the cords. Like, that's like a huge thing.
So the Quest.
Huge reason I sold what?
The Oculus Quest, I believe that's what it's called. It's a standalone wireless VR.
I mean, it has to do a lot of things, but like that was like a big thing for me. A big thing for me was like, that's like one of the reasons I sold it was that. But also, like, it's not the communal social aspect. Like, you can't take a drink of water or beer or whatever easily while you're playing. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like it removes you. Like,
I don't think that's what he meant by communal, but
I know, but I'm saying that a step further. Or just like the fact that you like to look at your phone or whatever. Like, it's. But, you know, but then that's part of the appeal of VR is, like, you're just completely...
It's a total immersive experience.
Else. Yeah. So, and it is cool. It's just, it needs to become... Like, I think it has a future, but it needs to be, like, thing that's part of the system, like an extra feature you could do. I don't know. Like, and, like, it needs to be a lot simpler. Like, it just needs to be...
There's a lot of hurdles that it has to overcome. Yeah. I don't think that's in the next 5 or 10 years because, I mean, the things, just from what you said, price, setup, accessibility, and the fact that it's still going to be a very isolated experience. And to his point, communal, because it's very hard to experience. Like, even if like, some games have, you could see what's on the TV, similar to what the person's seeing, but it's not going to be the same thing.
It's a parlor trick, like, it's a, you know, it's like something you bring out at a party once.
Yeah.
It's like hey, real talk. Right? My in-laws asked me to bring the PlayStation VR. Like they explicitly asked me to bring that to Thanksgiving tomorrow. So I need to charge all my Move controllers and stuff, get my PS4 ready and all that. But like it is cool. I think parlor like... trick is the right way to say it. Just because like every time I've shown it to like my parents who are visiting or anybody who's not really in the gaming space, their minds are blown and they think of it so positively where like if I pulled up Resident Evil 2 or one of the newest video games, they'd be like, oh, whatever, who cares? Like that looks nice, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, it is still kind of a quote unquote, like cutting edge kind of like exciting thing for people. It's not, I don't know. It hasn't run its course. But the prices need to come down and it needs to have less of a barrier to entry. Like my dad was so excited about after I showed him the Batman VR thing and he like a year later, he's like, hey, how do I get that Batman thing? And I'm like, oh, dad, you got to buy a PlayStation 4. You got to buy the VR headset and then you got to buy another Move controller and then make sure that you have the PlayStation camera. And then good luck setting any of that up because you can barely set up
a phone. Yeah, this right? 40-minute game.
And then all of a sudden that like what seems like a reasonable alternative for VR for people that own a PS4 already, like that becomes like an entry level VR thing. Like you at that point you might as well get like an Oculus or a Vive or something because you're spending $800-$900 to get it set up.
And I think that the Quest is the first kind of like the first step in the right direction now that we've all kind of established that VR works, I guess, like as a like way to play video games. Right. I think that like if I could be like if my dad's like, I want to buy that Batman thing. And if I could just be like, buy Oculus Quest and it's on the store or whatever. It's just one thing you buy and that's it. You know, that's where we want to get, or that's the only way that VR starts to gain any real traction. If it's that easy.
Yeah. You need to be just be able to go get it. And that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. But then to your, you know, to the point of the Batman stuff is like, you also then need software that's going to entice people and that's far and few between as it is.
There's a lot of content though. I think that,
We're
in this.
I don't know if there's a lot of content.
No, but there's cool stuff. There's good content. Like I have my PSVR, and I keep an eye on the games that are of high quality that come out on there. And I have such a big backlog, and I just can't bring myself to like set it all up so I can check these games out. But like I know that there's good games being made for VR experiences, like really interesting, cool stuff, but nobody's playing it. And that's kind of a bummer.
Right. And like, so even if you can get somebody like your dad to get one, it's like, who is giving him that information that like he should play this game other than you?
Right.
Because like, I don't see a lot, even like at game sites, like, yeah, every once in a while, like Beat Saber comes along and like people talk about that. Like, there's like one or two big VR events a year.
Yeah, I actually I'm subscribed to a I'm subscribed to like a YouTube channel that is exclusively PlayStation VR content. And so like every week they have a roundup of the latest releases and they review stuff and all that. And it's like, what an interesting little niche. And they have like, I think 15,000 subscribers. It's a very small community, but there's people that care, you know, they're right. dying, but they're there.
And that just as a quick aside, since you mentioned it, Beat Saber's company was sold to Google, not Google, Facebook.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, that's another big piece of news. But no, but to Phil Spencer's point, a lot of people took this the wrong way because they were like, "Yeah, if you're not invested in VR, it's not going to take off." And I mean, he was pretty frank. He says it's a dollar and cents thing. I mean, even if they wanted to, it doesn't make any sense because there's nothing out there that is selling in the butt load where you have to pay attention to it. It's I mean, it's very disheartening, I assume, for VR enthusiasts because Nintendo has pretty much gone on record that they're not doing VR. Now, Xbox is not doing it, which means that the two out of the three big console makers aren't doing VR.
I have my Nintendo Labo VR kit, so I don't know what you're talking about. I played Mario Odyssey. I was in there.
Nintendo's not doing VR.
I still feel like one day there's going to be like this VR game that breaks through, though. Like, I feel like it's got to happen. Like,
maybe that's Half-Life Alyx. Like, maybe no, that's the game. Like,
no, there's going to be something. I don't know.
I mean, Half-Life has a history of kind of like pushing things forward for games. Like,
I mean, I think we were already saying, like, the technology has to be way simpler at some point. Like,
yes.
I think the problem isn't necessarily going to be, because there are, to Hobby's point, there are some great games out there. There are games that people have said, this is kind of what you need to experience VR. The problem is always going to be like, that sounds great, until I actually have to experience VR. Because if somebody tells me there's a great Xbox game right now, I just have to buy an Xbox for it. If somebody tells me there's a great Switch or PS4 game, just buy those systems, or a game on a PC. Somebody tells me there's a great VR game, I have to make sure my computer can run a VR headset, or I have to buy a PS4, buy a VR headset, have to buy two Move controllers. That's a lot of hurdles.
Yes, yeah. The barrier to entry is too much.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you could have a killer app that's like, I mean, Jeff, you're saying there's going to be a VR game that's going to break through and be set the world on fire. I think that Beat Saber is a great example. Like, Beat Saber fucking rules, and everybody that had access to it bought it and loved it. It was the Rock Band of VR, you know? But like, there's just such a small install base that it didn't really matter. I don't know.
I mean, again, like, also just trying to think beyond even like our lifetime, like someday, like, these things are going to just be seen. You know what I mean? Like, VR is going to be like commonplace at some point. Like, I think, and I said not here
when I used to not my.
I mean, do I sound crazy right now? Like,
what you did. You literally so just lying? Sound crazy. You just told us that maybe after we die,
Jeff Erickson the III is going to be like down in the VR mall.
Like, Jesus Christ. No,
well, we're all going to die.
Maybe at some point, Jeff, it will happen. I hope it's not like after we're dead.
I'm just saying, like, you know, in the scope of time.
But I think VR has its place in, like somebody mentioned, arcades and carnival. Like, it has its thing in like novelty. Like, I remember Google has like that thing where it's like, oh, we're gonna, like, if you can't visit Paris, you can have a VR experience going to Paris. And like, if you did that at a mall or a store that had that, like, fine, that's great. At a carnival.
The mall we one of the malls we have here actually has, like, they've rented out. It used to be a Champ Sporting Goods, so it's a pretty big storefront, and now all it is like 15 VR setups.
Yeah,
Always being used.
Yeah, because again, I think VR is a technology that everybody's into, and I think everybody thinks it's cool for a novelty. For like, oh, this is great to kill like half an hour for. I think the problem, again, is getting it at home. It's like, no, I could pay you $20. I'll use this for an hour, and I'm good.
I think it needs to be an option, and it needs to be like a pair of glasses that comes with your system. Like, I'm thinking, yep, like, way off shit. Like, that shit will happen, I think, somehow. You know, I don't know.
I don't because it's always going to be a chicken and egg scenario where, like, the major publishers and console makers aren't going to support VR until they see that there's money in VR, and there won't be money in VR because none of the major publishers or console makers are supporting it.
I think it's safe to say, though, that, like, by the time we're all dead, then it'll exist.
Thank you.
Or
get some backup on this fucking podcast.
Or it doesn't matter because we're all dead.
Right. One or the other. Jeff.
Well, we won't know because we'll all be dead.
Jeff, what if there was a mail delivery game in VR where you had to balance yourself?
I wouldn't.
Dude, Death Stranding VR. Hell yeah.
All right. So anyway, influential games of the decade. We don't want to let this one pass us by. And I'm interested to hear Hobby's thoughts. We kind of know where we have a preview of where Jeff's going to go with this. So
I started this topic on Twitter.
You did.
Yeah.
Influential games of the decade. I'm so unprepared. I didn't know.
I know. Sorry. And I feel unprepared even though I've known about this for like 2 weeks. Like, I didn't take notes. I don't like have anything prepared this week. I don't have an opening statement. Like, what the fuck? Just spring this on me.
We spring your topic on you. It's a problem.
I mean, we did literally just spring it on Javi, but we told you about this.
not even that we told him about it. It was all because Jeff tweeted about it.
You brought it up.
Some Inception shit right
this
here.
Spawned from you. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, the decade is ending. There's been a lot of great games. And
I have Jeff, a three-pack.
You have a three-pack of influential games?
Yes.
Or just
a
three-pack
of games? They count as one, and they represent a movement.
About
the three-pack is Braid, Limbo, and Super Meat Boy.
Oh, God.
Interesting.
This was PAX East, the very first PAX East. Actually, I think that Braid and Super Meat Boy came out
a little bit
before Limbo.
2008.
Oh, damn it. So it's not in our decade, is it?
No. Well,
never mind. Pull up.
No.
I was going to say right.
Super Meat right. Boy does qualify, though.
I would get your reasoning for Braid. And for me, that would be the same reasoning for the other two, but go ahead.
Yeah. What I was getting at was the dawn of the indie game developer and them kind of getting over the stigma of, like, oh, these are. I don't know. We were entering the, oh, these are indie games, but still, like, seeing a video game that was made by one or two people on your Xbox, on the store, that was surreal and, like, unbelievable. And nowadays, every single week, our Switches are bombarded with these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the dawn of the next age of video game games and development, right? Like, no longer did things have to be made by, like, companies. I mean, these things are obviously, they register as a company, but, like, it's a couple of individuals, you know, which led into Kickstarter and all these other things. I think that those were trailblazing games. There was nothing like them before. I mean, I guess Cave Story, but, like, Cave Story was kind of one in a million, right? But yeah, I think that popularizing the indie game and making that kind of the norm, that started with those games.
It was also interesting, like, at the time that, like, Braid came out, it wasn't just the fact that it was, like, indie. It was, like, the idea of downloading a game on your system was, like,
yeah, that was new.
Like, a new idea. Like, I was like, oh, this is a downloadable game. You know what I mean? Now it's like, yeah, they're all like, I download all of them. Like,
exactly. You download Death Stranding, it takes forever.
Well, one, and you know, dismissing Braid, which was kind of like the catalyst for this indie, you know, push that we've had over the last 12 years. But like Limbo and Super Meat Boy were indie games that were kind of, here's like this next step in what they were. Like Limbo is like just this beautiful looking monochrome platformer that had some challenge to it. And it's like, it's not something that like you could get. You know, we lost those B tier games in the 360 kind of generation, and these like this was still then, but this was kind of like replacing it at that time. Like we lost those big B tier games, but now we were getting these more like $15-$20
experiences,
like really well done kind of 2D shit. Like usually, yeah.
And that's expanded too. Like now you're getting pretty cool, it's like 3D shit. That's like you got stuff like Firewatch and like, you know, different genres, but still kind of coming out of this movement that Hobby kind of pointed out.
Yeah. Some easy ones if we want to knock those out: Minecraft and not PUBG, but the mod that came before it, the DayZ, whatever, the first battle royale game, basically.
And I think this is where we're gonna jump in, because I think part of what we said was Fortnite, and I understand that PUBG is kind of the predecessor to that. Like, you wouldn't have Fortnite without PUBG, but it's one of those things where I feel like influence is one thing being copied, but another thing is actually becoming popular and accessible. And I think Fortnite takes the formula that PUBG had and made it accessible for many people.
I think it's like a percentage credit you give to one or the other, right? It's like, do you give 60% of the credit to Fortnite?
Right.
Well, 40% to PUBG or what? You know, because it's you did it together in a way. Like,
right. Yeah. This question came up on your Twitter feed, Jeff, like where, you know, I'm sure you're going to talk about Dark Souls shortly, but somebody like the friend of the show, Daxter, he was like, well, he's like, I would say Demon Souls is kind of like, it's the one that kind of like pioneered that, but Dark Souls is kind of the one that hit mainstream success on a larger scale. And PUBG was certainly successful. Fortnite is just in another fucking stratosphere.
You can be successful, but like what Fortnite did was make it accessible. And I think sometimes that is something.
Yeah, but I guess the question, though,
it's better I think, but you know.
But like, is Fortnite kind of like the end game of that influence, right? Like, or
what did
Fortnite influence?
Or
Fortnite influenced like a ton of bad shit.
Here's my point, Javi. So influential. This is what I said like a week ago. Like, what if, I don't know, like 6 years from now, that it just looks like a fad in the past, like. You know,
and that,
like,
and
it's
that can
not happen. Been to be, yeah, I'm saying. So it's like,
but I don't.
There's no. Like, there's certain other things this decade that I think there's no doubt they're gonna kind of like.
You're right, Jeff. But I think you're looking at. I think you're looking at the mode itself, like the battle royale mode. For me, Fortnite is like where its influence is broader, in the fact that, you know, their style of storefront has infected so many games.
Okay, you're talking its business model, not battle royale.
Influence across the board, like dances, like, I mean, yes, there's been dances and other things, but they monetized it in a way. Like, go ahead, Joe.
Is any of that new? Like fucking microtransactions? That doesn't feel new.
No, but it's not. Like, it's the way they've done. Like, they've actually other games have actually lifted Fortnite. Like, Go to Gears of War's storefront right now. Mm-hmm. Gears 5. They have lifted Fortnite's storefront. They've lifted their battle pass. Like, they've taken all that shit and dropped it into a totally different game.
What's your one sentence? Because I have no idea, because I don't buy that shit. Like, what's your one sentence thing of, like, what that means? Like, I don't even...
I
just measured it cosmetics or what? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's cosmetics that refresh every day and they have premium.
It's their business design.
It's very hard. It's very hard to sum up in one sentence. But I think essentially it found a way to bring a mobile model to consoles, where it's like, we're going to have this stuff and it's going to be available for like 3 weeks. And in order to get it, you have to like complete these objectives in this time frame.
Right, and it's like, we're not saying it's good influence, but it is.
I don't even consider.
Like,
but essentially,
influence can be bad too.
Yeah, I know. No, that's true. But it's essentially found a way to make games as a service a different thing, where there's a reason that you will come back to this game month after month, and not just like, oh, I played for a few weeks and I got bored. It's because, and Overwatch does the same thing. It's like, oh, there's a summer event now. There's a, I think Fortnite is on, what, season 8?
They are on season 11.
Oh my god.
Okay.
I'm way behind. They've actually, with season 10, they ended, they blew up their old island, went dark for like a couple days, and now there's a new island, and they're on season 1 of that, which is season 11. My son plays a lot of Fortnite.
Sure, just sound wink, wink.
Sure. Little Chris, got it.
But no, and I think that's I think that's also a great point. It's one of those games that not just influences genres, but it's also a huge game for the next generation. And I think that sometimes it's hard to kind of account for it now, but Minecraft and Fortnite are going to be the games that the kids growing up now are going to get as their Mario and Zelda in 20 years.
Totally. I think Minecraft is already that for the generation prior.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I mean, because Minecraft is still within this decade. But yeah, right. It's that there are people growing up, and that's what they, and you know, like, and kind of to go back to the point, because we have skipped over it, like, you can't ignore Minecraft, because part of Minecraft is in Fortnite. With the whole crafting as you go.
Yep. Resource gathering, building, craft, like, they've even introduced, like, you know, where you can upgrade your weapons by resource gathering.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, and we'll get to it, but I think Minecraft is the ultimate big winner. But I think going into the next decade, I think Fortnite is going to be the one that you see the most immediate influence on, and see how, I mean, like, you know, when we spoke, when we were speaking about this on Twitter, one of the things that we pointed out, it's like, it's not just like, you know, it's not like your little things being influenced by Fortnite. There are, like, Call of Duty is doing Battle Royale modes now.
Yep.
Like, when you have the biggest franchise in gaming copying you,
and you're doing battle passes, right. And
they did it last year, though. They didn't do it this year. Yeah, I guess unless they're planning on it. Like,
yeah, but they also don't necessarily, like, they don't do zombies every year either.
But they also have their. They also released Call of Duty Mobile, and that has a Battle Royale mode in it, which is actually pretty solid, just if you were wondering.
I will never, ever play.
We weren't.
It's fun enough.
But yeah, I mean, Call of Duty did it, Battlefield did it. I mean, like, even Tetris did a Battle Royale mode now.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, you're right.
So, like, it's hard to not see where it's kind. And the thing is, the thing that I think most impressive is the game is what, 2 years old.
Yep.
And you can already see its impact.
Dude, Tetris 99 is so good.
It is, yeah. And it's, and I'm sure if somebody would have come up with that idea beforehand, but it's like, apply a battle royale model to something that does not make any sense, and it's like, we get Tetris 99. And it works, mm-hmm. And it works wonderfully.
Yeah.
Just crazy, because it's all just like, just eliminate till you get to one. Such a simple concept.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's so funny, because Microsoft was just on the edge of this. Ashton, I just really hate the fact that they got rid of 1 versus 100.
You're right. It's in the title.
Yeah, it's
the influence is in the title.
It's always so funny that, like, there are games that are just outside the window, and it's like, if you had come like 2 or 3 years later, you could have been on this groundswell. Like,
right.
It's a very random example, but I always think some EA's Boogie on the Wii, because like, they were like, oh, we're gonna create like, this dancing game on the Wii, and I was like, this is so dumb. And then, like, 2 years later, Ubisoft's like, we're gonna do Just Dance. That franchise has been going on for 12 years now, so
yep,
something worked.
And I think, circling back to Minecraft, like, it's not just the crafting and the resource gathering and like the like, I mean, you see all that in all these survival games, and but it's also the you know, the pixelated art. We saw a big boom of that. With like to the point where it's overkill now.
Like, yeah. Like you said, negative influences, but yes, yeah. I am. You folks talked about indie games. I like indie games, but yeah, I've gotten so tired of like that retro pixel art style. Like, I get it; it's cheap and it looks decent, but I'm like, when every other indie game does it, it just kind of gets tiresome.
Yeah, I mean, there's good and bad ways to do it, just like anything. I think that games like Blasphemous, that I was talking about earlier, they're really going above and beyond with what you can do with pixel art. Like, it looks like full like Disney animation. Disney's probably not the right example for that game, but like very well animated stuff, like hyper animated. Anyways, yeah, but like people use it as a crutch for sure. There's a lot of like lazy pixel art going on.
Right, Tony, do you have any before we let Jeff go off?
Let's just Jeff go off.
Do it, Jeff.
This was mostly me making fun of Jeff's toys.
Well, like, you know, I started this by saying on Twitter, like, if there was a more influential game than Dark Souls this decade, I'd love to hear it. And, like, you guys are all making, like, I think a lot, you know, no one could I'm not going to disagree with anything that you guys said, but I just think as far as, like, 3D action goes, like, Dark Souls was like one of those markers. Like, it was just like, this is how 3D action games should play. Like,
I don't think people would disagree with you on it being one of the most influential. I think it was the most influential.
Yes.
You did make a very declarative statement.
I love it. Strong.
But
I mean, strong. Very wrong. But quite strong.
I mean, I think
the Donald Trump method.
Jeff definitely has like he has some good examples there though, where games that you wouldn't expect it.
It pops up in everything.
Like something like Assassin's Creed, like Origins or Odyssey, kind of adopting the control scheme
for like the combat. Like it's like you're using the shoulder buttons. Like, you know, the left shoulder button is to hold up your shield, the right, like that was not a common control scheme before Dark Souls. Like, they invented that. It felt weird. We were like, what the fuck, why am I not using the face buttons?
Not sure they invented it, but
yeah, it doesn't say
kind of, like it kind of. Yeah. Okay.
That's language is important. So
if they didn't invent it. They popularized it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Yeah. All right. Fine. I'm not.
I'm sure that there's definitely been games that use that, and like it's my you know, going back to what becomes popular is kind of like the piece that influences it. Like nobody would say that the Gears is like the. You know, Gears of War, like everyone points to that as the cover-based shooter kind of grandfather.
They point to it for a reason, though. Like, it's not right. Just because
it was the
popularized
the popular it. One. Like,
they did it right too. Like, they like did it best. Like, they did it in a way that made it like that validated.
Made it accessible and popular.
But that's what we're just trying to say. It's like it's different to say it invented it, other than like it got it right. There's those two separate things.
But you got, like, I give Gears credit for that. Like, if you had to ask me, like, what made, like, cover, like, part of a game, it was Gears. Like, maybe someone tried it before, but anyways.
But go on. Reap your praise on Dark Souls.
Dude, like the amount of games it touches, like again, like we just on this show tonight talked about Star Wars. Like, think of how many things in that are exactly like basically lifted from Dark Souls, where like if you die out on your own, like you have to go back and get to where you were. Like, that was not like a thing before Dark Souls. Like,
yes, it like, was.
No, it wasn't. We have to go back and collect the spot from where you died from.
Well, okay, that's not a mechanic in Star Wars.
Like, you have to go back, and it is, like, where you have to go back.
Kill the guy. You have to kill the guy, or touch the guy.
You just have to hit them.
Yeah. Wait,
but it is, like, you lose your experience. Like, if you die fighting somebody, you will lose your experience, and you have to go then hit that enemy.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
You gotta play some more Star Wars, goddammit.
You see that mechanic in, like, Shovel Knight, of all things, and lots of other games.
it's not something that like frustrated me in Star Wars, but it was definitely not something I enjoyed. Like it just like, angered me. Like fuck.
Like maybe something did that before Dark Souls, but it's like Dark Souls set that kind of standard, right? You know, like it's just like it's just a bunch of things like that that kind of reverberated through the decade, and like all the big games that I really liked, you know, like and so.
No, Jeff, I think I think you're onto something here. Because I'm typing in games of 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. Like, there's some good games in here, but like, I think that because you really have to have something. I don't know what's the right word. I guess influential, but to have people having to bite their tongue from saying this is the Dark Souls of blank, you know, like it needs to be on the mind. It needs to be kind of like.
That's like a meme. It's like
it's a meme. Yeah.
Like there is a like a Twitter account that's like this is the Dark Souls of whatever. Like because every review references Dark Souls. Like
I think it was reviews, but I also think it was fans saying like anything that Dark Souls did that appeared in another game was like this is like Dark Souls.
Sure, there's a facetious side to it, but it also that's indicative of like how
exactly
influential the game is, right? It's on everyone's mind.
It is kind of a mute at some points where it's like, no, like in this case, it's not.
Like, yeah,
like, I mean, at some point, like people are just going to credit Dark Souls on inventing like save points
or difficulty. Like yeah, that's for a while. Like they were just using it as like, oh, a game is like this is the Dark Souls of this because it's difficult. Like it's not.
Which I hate like, that. I mean,
yeah, like, I don't like that. That is definitely a part of that. This is the Dark Souls of that because the only thing that they thought of Dark Souls was like, oh, that game was really hard. This is a really hard game like that. Like there are parts frustrating part where it gets middling. Even
if the person saying that is an idiot or like totally wrong, there is that seed there, right? Like there's that circle of influence of they thought of Dark Souls, like whether or not
sure
right. It's one of those things where there is a people just have a tiny frame of reference and it's one of those bad things. Like we all have that tendency, like even aside from video games, it's like if you want to sell somebody on a movie or a TV show, it's like so and so. So this is like Game of Thrones, or this is like Lost, or something like that. It's shorthand to give you a basis of where to start.
So, but to reiterate, though, like I'm looking at all these games each of these years, and I'm like, were these influential? Like
also think of how like before Dark Souls, how much games had leaned in the direction of over explaining things to you. Really long tutorials at the beginning, and Dark Souls kind of like threw you right in.
That's a boomerang effect, though.
Nintendo Genesis phase didn't really do that. That was more of a 3D thing, and then that was like Dark Souls came along, and like, okay, we'll just you kind of understand games now again, so we'll do that.
I think they really pushed like that direction where it was like, you know what, gamers are not as stupid as you think they are. Maybe they want a little bit of a challenge. They want to like figure things out. They don't want like over explained to them and like holding their hand and yelling at you through the game. Like this is what you should do. Like I really do think it was like leaning in that other direction before that. Like it's not just about difficulty and the idea of difficulty too. The idea that like you cannot beat this game, maybe, you know?
Okay, but again, like that's what Chris was saying. It's like this isn't a new concept. It was a concept that was more prevalent in the 3D era. But like, if you go back to NES and Genesis games,
I'm saying influential though. I'm saying did it change the direction?
I don't think it did. I think we were gonna boomerang that way.
Yes,
I don't think difficulty was or lack of direction. Like there were games that were doing that anyway. It's just that the mainstream and still. The mainstream games are still a lot of handholdy bullshit. Like, I don't think we've turned that corner. Like, Assassin's Creed is not really dumping you out there and going, go explore. Like,
I don't know if you're giving enough credit that, like, the big holiday game from EA
and the big Star Wars game.
Oh no, we're not. No, but also, that is a game that is very handhold in its opening.
Like
that. Yeah, like there's a fucking tutorial level.
To say that it wasn't influenced heavily by Dark Souls.
Oh no, it was.
But
I said this last week, Javi, when you weren't on, and I'll say it again. I think that the influences that it pulls from it are bad. Like, I think that's the part that I think is bad about the game, because it doesn't.
We're not measuring good or bad.
Right. No, it is influenced by. There's no denying that. And I think that is. Wrong influence.
I'm just saying that as I look at these titles for each of these years, I'm like, fuck, maybe Jeff's right.
Okay. So you've mentioned this just several times. What is it you're looking at?
Okay. So I'm looking at Halo. Wait, what am I? What website?
What games?
Okay. So like Halo 5, like that's probably a fine game, but it's more Halo. Batman Arkham Knight, that's a great game, but it's more Batman.
I'm still like, what are you looking at exactly? Just games that came out that year, or
yes,
yeah.
Okay. When you Google games of and then type in a year, it shows you a big carousel of like the most popular games that came out that year. So I'm just kind of like a quick way to look at the decade.
I'm like, what's influential
here? What am I seeing all over the place from any of these games? And it's reminding me of our Pokemon discussion earlier, where it's like these games are what we got before, but again with a higher number next to it, which is not bad.
And again, I think the discussion isn't necessarily is Dark Souls influential. I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that. Is it the most influential game of the decade, where I think there's a stronger case for Minecraft and Fortnite than there is for Dark Souls.
Yeah, but like we're trying to whittle down to one, the most influential game. That's what we're trying to do.
That was
Jeff was trying to do.
Okay,
he made the flat out proclamation that it was the
And like that's funny, but like maybe I don't know, because like Fortnite did have the, like you said, the influence with the storefront and making that model of business popular,
which is why for me I think it's Minecraft.
I think it has to be Minecraft.
Minecraft's an interesting one though, because like I can think of a bunch of imitators, but I don't know outside of Minecraft itself and like the influence in the sense of it influenced a generation of kids and people that played it.
But like,
I don't know how it influenced the rest of the industry per se.
Like look at the building in Fallout 4. Like look at all of the survival games that are go and chop down trees to get wood and then build your house. Mm. Like they're not necessarily Minecraft games, but Minecraft is permeated through everything this generation.
You don't get to Fortnite without Minecraft, and then you look at games like, you know, much more games and stuff like Ego World, which is Kiryu, Minecraft influenced title, which is completely ironic as well, since Minecraft is based off of the model of Egos and stuff like that. We've mentioned the preparation of pixel art in gaming, which was very big. Like, I remember when Minecraft came out at the end of the last generation and saying like the biggest and most influential game of that generation. It's an HD title, but it's not like pushing graphics in any way that you would have imagined at the start of the PS3 and the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, do you guys have a answer for what you think was the most influential of the previous decade, or just any you do? Okay, I want to hear it real quick, because I've had one for a long time. I still think it's one of the most. It was like a pivotal moment in gaming.
Halo.
No, Halo. For me, there's three answers.
Okay,
there's Wii Sports, there's Gears of War, and there's Angry Birds.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah, those are good. I always thought the first Modern Warfare, COD 4.
Modern Warfare would be up there.
Specifically Modern Warfare, because of the way that it broke through the barriers. Like, I think that was the first big punch through the wall of like whether or not video games are socially acceptable. Once you saw celebrities on Jay Leno talking about, man, I can't stop playing Call of Duty.
Right.
And it's like, oh shit, no longer are you going to see people on like dating shows on MTV making fun of guys for having a PS2 in their dorm, right? Like,
see,
we got over that hump at that moment, I felt. But on top of that,
I think there, I think there might be an argument for Wii Sports in that matter too.
I think Wii Sports would be a bigger one for that.
Some grandma playing it and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe. Like, but yeah.
Like, even on TV shows, like if they had a, like even now, if you have a fake system, it's still kind of the Wii system because it's a very easy language to understand when you're doing it. And I think just kind of breaking down that barrier that anybody can kind of game.
We're playing the bowling.
Yeah. Right. And yeah. Like, without Wii, Wii Sports.
The Wii was such a, like a family unit, you know, not that that's a bad thing, but yeah, like yeah. it wasn't necessarily cool. It was just accessible, right?
No, I mean, like, you don't,
I think that,
you don't,
like,
you're not uncool if you sell 100 million just 100 million units. You're on TV shows. You're on Oprah. You're on Ellen.
You're not. You're not cool. Like because you have a Wii in your house.
All the cool.
No, you're not cool.
Zach and Wiki, man. What are you guys talking about?
Dude, Zach and Wiki is awesome.
You're not cool, but you're a regular person. Like you have a TV in your house. You don't. You're not cool because you have a TV in your house. It's just kind of accepted that you have a TV in your house.
But Call of Duty was more about like
it's something. It made it. It made video gaming cool, right?
Like yes, that's right. See, having an Xbox 360 became cool when that game exploded.
See, but, I feel like that's on top of that, gamer like, mentality, though.
Maybe. But anyways, that's one factor of why I think it's one of the most influential games of that decade. Oh. But the other one is that it was the first to either popularize, but I think implement, I might be wrong, but RPG elements in multiplayer. Like once you're gaining XP after every match and you're filling up rank and prestige and all that stuff, that started there, or at least
popular. The carrot on the stick, where you're always trying to better yourself.
And it's fundamental to every single multiplayer game you play to this day. Yeah, having an effect.
Even started with COD 4. Halo Reach, which came in 2010, following off of like the super successful fucking Halo 3, they implemented like an experience system. Like,
yeah. Like, cause so, it's awesome. It was good. It was a great thing to add. Yes. That's it like, keeps you playing. It keeps it interesting. It's what makes you go one more match. I just got to get to the next level.
I want to see. I want to try out that weapon when I get to level 17. Or whatever.
Exactly.
But this is what I would say. This is what I've said for Wii Sports last generation and will say now. In Wii Sports, we got Kinect, we got the PS Move. But the biggest thing is like we really got mobile games becoming a thing where you can use touch and motion controls. And that has been, quite for a lot of people, the dominant force of the industry for the past 15 years has been mobile gaming.
Sure. I mean,
I'm so out of touch.
It's just no way. Like if you see the pie graph of active users and growth, mobile gaming makes up a huge percentage of the gaming sphere, bigger than consoles and bigger than people.
That makes me sad.
Why does it make you sad? But why does it gaming, Jeff?
I don't play games on my phone.
Why does it make you sad? Because everybody has a phone.
If they take it away from me,
they're not going to take it away from you, Jeff.
They better not take it away from
me. Hey, Jeff, this will make you feel better. I might be totally wrong, but I think that growth doesn't come at the cost of console gamers.
I think there's more
console gamers than ever before, but there's also even more people playing video games on their phone. And I think that's fine. Who cares?
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Jeff, I'm an optimist about these things anyways. I think movies are going to survive. I think games are going to survive. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, well, we've been hearing since the PlayStation 2, this is the last generation for consoles. Like that was 20 years ago. Like,
yeah.
I do think we're going to get to the end of the console generation, but not for that reason. But I do think at some point it's going to kind of become that you... Like, I mean, we see it now with like, Game Pass and PS. Like, it's going to be more streaming and not necessarily like you have to buy a new box every 5 years to get the latest games.
It's all going to happen when VR becomes popular, Earl.
After all dead. But no, I do
episode
that
title. There you go.
Yep.
We're all dead. I do envision that there will come a time when we are beholden to, and we kind of started asked with this transition, we'll probably see it. Like, where you kind of have the, I don't know, cross-gen titles, and I think you're going to get more and more of that, where it's like, if you want the latest and best, you have to buy this new system, but you can still kind of get an experience here. Or we'll see more of the Pro and the Xbox One S and X, where it's like, yeah, you have this console generation, but we'll refresh it every so often with these fancier systems instead of like a whole new reset.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. All right.
I hate it.
Well, I don't think
I hate everything.
Javi hates it. Jeff is terrified they're going to come and take his games away. And we've gone extra long. We have not established what the most influential game of the generation is, but we've named some great games that are influential.
I mean, I established
it's safe to say it's Dark Souls.
Right.
it's safe to say that it will be very hard to find a contender that is not Dark Souls, Minecraft, or Fortnite in the past decade, which is both sad and exciting because, to Javi's point, there are not a lot of original games in the past 10 years that aren't sequels or building on an idea from a previous game.
But that Resident Evil 2 remake was fire.
And to that point, though, you do get to a point where it's like, we kind of are setting out, like, movies are kind of like that. Like, we're kind of setting like movies. It's not like anybody's coming out with a new technique or something every year. Like,
sure.
Like, what would be the most influential movie of this past decade? Oh, Avengers. But aside from that,
I think I've kind of brought this up on Movie Dudes, but I think a really exciting thing for me that's happening in movies is like, we are the first generation that's looking back on movies, nostalgic for them, like in the movies, like where it's like you watch The Irishman and you like feel nostalgic for like Goodfellas and shit like that, or like Star Wars. It's like nostalgia for something that was 30 years ago in the films. It's like, I don't think films in the 60s and 70s
years ago
didn't really, like, it wasn't nostalgic for the 50s. It was still inventing the, like, the form, and now it's like, now it's like,
the form, I don't know, reflecting like, on itself. My dad's pretty old, Jeff. I definitely think he was nostalgic for like those early days of movies. Mm-hmm. Like,
the films are becoming like, film is becoming a nostalgic medium.
I think it's been nostalgic before. Like, you look at stuff like, what is it, 50s and 60s with stuff like Going to the Rape, Arabia, which was like, it's not a time people were
go back even farther. Like,
no, I'm saying, look at Dr. Sleep. It's nostalgic for a film.
Okay. Oh, the film itself is nostalgic. Okay. I thought you were.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, it's nostalgic about an era in film.
Right.
The Irishman makes you feel sad about, like, all these people that you've watched act on film for 4 years, they're getting old. Like,
okay.
Well, I mean, that's
your point. I thought you were trying to say that, like, our generation is the first ones actually nostalgic for.
No, I'm saying that, like, film is just kind of like a young genre.
Hollywood doesn't have anything more than Hollywood right now. Like, I think somebody pointed that out to me a few years ago when The Artist won like Best Picture at the Oscars, because The Artist was a movie that I assume most people forgot exists, but it was a movie about Hollywood, and it's like Best Picture. And yet, like you said, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, My Name is Dolomite. Dolomite is my name. Very kind of reminiscent of a specific period, and The Disaster Artist is another one that's like, aren't we so special and great at making these movies?
It was just like we're dealing with like these great filmmakers who are growing old, and like what they have to say about their career. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it feels new to me in some way. Like,
no, it is.
Filmmakers have gotten old, but it's like the medium still feels so young that, I don't know, like, there's something interesting about it.
Yeah, and no, you're right. It's a very new thing where it's like a lot of people are. Even outside of movies, and I don't want to bring this up too much, but like, you look at the Scorsese and the MCU debate that's been happening for the past month and a half, and that's very much that mentality of like, when I was young, movies were this, And like, I yearn for those types of movies, and that's kind of what you're getting in movies now. Is it's like, wasn't it so great when we did this stuff? Like, men were men, and they did their own stunts, and there was like a bunch of CG and stuff like that. And you get that stuff in some of these movies now. Like you said, Once Upon a Time. Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, it's a very idealistic stance on how movies used to be made and how great Hollywood is.
Until Dark Souls came along.
Until Dark Souls.
Okay. Exactly.
What is the Dark Souls of movies?
Blade Runner 2049, that's what.
I think that was the Avengers.
No, the Avengers is Call of Duty.
Came out in 2011, fucking reshaped a decade.
What is the Dark Souls of movies, though, Jeff? Not what's the influential movie of the decade. No, what's the one that is so difficult, Jeff? So hard to watch.
You know what it's going to be, though, sadly enough, even though it's not from this decade? It'll probably be Avatar. It's the movie that has influenced a lot of movies.
Not this decade, right?
No, it's not this decade. It's 10 years ago now. So,
God, really? Wow.
Yeah, it came out.
One of those people say that movie's. No one fucking cares about Avatar anymore.
No one cared.
James Cameron.
All the love that came from that.
James Cameron loves Avatar, and he
there's going to be 12 more movies. He's.
And the funniest thing for me. Is like, I hated Avatar, but like, I love that land at Disney World. It's like their best fucking land in all of Disney World is the Avatar land.
And this is what I would say about Avatar. Is like, a lot of people always get the same thing, that people don't remember the movie, people don't remember characters' names. I'm like, that's a fair point.
Jake Sully. But,
yes, that is the name. It Rained as the highest grossing movie of all time for a decade, which is still a great achievement on its own. I look at something, and I'm going to get some crap for this, I'm sure. But I look at something like Avengers Endgame, which came out this year. And I would not be surprised. Like, I feel like that movie has just been forgotten already by the end of the year, as far as like discussion and discourse around that.
We move on too fast now.
Yeah. We just, it's like, oh, I mean, this. Sometimes this movie is like, this movie's 11 years of hype and anticipation. We saw it became the highest grossing movie of all time this summer, and then we don't talk about it ever again.
Well, I don't know. What do you there's even nothing. Say about a movie long?
Well, that's, I mean, there's part of it that goes into the fact that I enjoy the MCU. I enjoy a lot of films in it, but a lot of them are also kind of I always compare it to fast food. It's like, I never crave McDonald's, but I don't mind having McDonald's.
Dude, McDonald's is awesome.
But I'm never going to say, I'm never going to go to people and be like, oh man, you're ready to go to McDonald's. It's so good. It's like, I had McDonald's. You know McDonald's is good. I know McDonald's is good. But
eat some fries on the way home.
Yeah. Talk about it. Like, the fries are like Doctor Strange and Ant-Man. and it's like, yeah, they're enjoyable, and it goes great with the burger that, you know, while I'm waiting for my Avengers movies to come out, I need to I snack on some fries on my way home, and then I go home and I get the burger out and eat that.
And then you give like the smaller fry bag to your friend and go, here you go, buddy.
That's what I do with my kids. Like I've been eating out of them. Yeah, these ones are yours.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys suck, man. I'm sorry, man.
They didn't fill them up all the way.
I should have went back and complained. I'm sorry. I didn't see that.
And then like your soda is like Spider-Man Far From Home. It's a really nice way to kind of refresh after you ate all the food and, you know, wash it all down. And then you're good to go for the next round, whenever that may be. But yeah, that's kind of how I see the MCU. It's like, it's great. It's fun. It's mass-produced. But it's not something I'm like, I don't have deep thoughts on it. It's like, it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. And that's as far as deep as I need to go with it.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it works. It's, you know, like, McDonald's is the biggest restaurant in the world for a reason.
Because they have those fries. They have that anime.
They have those. I prefer Wendy's fries, but that's a whole different discussion.
Well, I like Wendy's as well. But
Frosty baby. Give me that
McDonald's Frosty. Wins that debate in my mind. But either way.
I used to like Wendy's.
I'm with you on that, Javi.
Thank you.
But yeah.
On what?
Fries.
McDonald's fries are better than Wendy's fries.
Oh, yeah. Wendy's fries used to be awesome. Now they suck. I hate them.
I actually prefer the new. I prefer to see. I mean, I was going to say the new season things, but it's been like 5 years. So much
better, dude.
Nah.
I mean, they're still better than Burger King fries.
I was about to say, can we all agree that Burger King fries are awful? Yeah,
they're terrible.
Wait, who had the most influential fries of the last decade?
They're fine in a pinch. I think they're fine in a pinch. Like, they're not,
I think French fries are fine in a pinch no matter what. But yeah. I mean, like, there are preferences.
Like if I mean, need something with grease on it.
Like, honestly, fries, if I was to get fries, I go to
standard. McDonald's is the gold standard of fast food fries. I think.
Shake Shack. Shake Shack fries. Sorry.
Yeah, Shake Shack is good. Actually, if I was to go with
one, but are they fast food?
If I was to go with one, I would go with Popeyes. I have their fries.
Their fries are all right. Yeah. They're nicely seasoned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Arby's has good fries, too.
I've never been to an Arby's.
I mean, that's really the only thing that's any good there.
Go to Arby's, get their curly fries, like the curly seasoned fries, and get an orange shake.
You'll feel terrible.
I mean, just one day closer to VR.
just to kind of prove a point, though, we spent more time talking about French fries than we did talking about the Marvel movies.
Yep.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't want to say. I know Javi's a fan of the Marvel movies, and like, I just don't want. I'm not a fan, so I'm not going to say anything about
We've had these discussions.
Yeah.
We know how they're gonna go.
Earl and I like the Marvel movies. I believe
I mean, they're fine. Them as well. There's some I really like. I love
that one.
It's the Captain America one that's like good action in it.
Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier.
Yes. Yeah. The only good one. Yes, that one.
That's my favorite.
21
movies. That's the best movie in the.
I mean, that one feels like a movie. Anyways.
Yeah.
It's all great. Right. But well. Enjoy your turkey, guys. Thanks. If you eat that,
I feel like that was a really inflammatory kind of thing. I feel like
no. You know what? We ended on Jeff complimenting a Marvel, so I'm pretty stoked.
Yes. Okay. There we go. He likes.
I guess, okay.
He okay. likes Winter Soldier.
Jeff's like, well, I didn't compliment it.
I feel like I'm gonna get death threats and shit.
I know. I was trying to get out of here and go to bed, but I have to know. I'm always curious about this. What is on your Thanksgiving plate?
Ham. I'm going to make ham tomorrow.
Oh, ham. That's the
really?
Worst.
You're having ham?
Mm-hmm.
You have an actual holiday.
I prefer it.
Yes, because ham is better.
Yeah.
Ham is for right. holiday.
Y'all are crazy.
Like, and here's the thing. I love turkey, but I realized, like, I think it was last year, I was like, you know what? Ham's a little bit easier, and it tastes better. It's all salty and amazing.
Yep. I love ham.
And so I'm going ham.
Wow.
Do you want like what we generally eat, Earl?
Yes.
Or so we'll have turkey, but my mom has started making fish in the last like decade or so because
interesting.
We hate turkey. She doesn't, but my brother and I hate turkey, and my kids hate turkey. So she started making fish and mashed potatoes, macaroni and cheese. There's stuffing. Oh, yeah. I don't eat stuffing. Green bean casserole, which I also don't eat.
I don't get that, but and, the green bean casserole. But
sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you call those candy yams or is it sweet potatoes?
Sweet potatoes.
It depends on my mom says they're sweet potatoes. My dad says yams.
Actually, you know what I call it? Marshmallow delivery vehicle.
My girlfriend called it sweet potatoes, and she grabbed a can that said yams. So what is
They're
that?
Yams. They're yams.
I mean, I think they're the same thing, or close enough. But yes. So that's Chris.
That's not my jam, though. I stay away from that shit.
What is on your Thanksgiving plate?
For me, like my shit is, I like to mix mashed potatoes with the corn and the stuffing and the turkey all together.
You just mix like it all
at once. Yeah.
Crazy person, are you?
You always
like mix. I'm a person that like mixes the mashed potatoes with the corn constantly, like to get like
God, I would yeah, eat the mashed potatoes before I even put the corn on my plate so they don't infect it.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
I have a problem.
That's some OCD. I mix that shit all up. That's kind of like all my and that and the little roll, you know, like the roll at the
bacon. Yeah, you gotta have a roll.
Yeah, you gotta have rolls. Yeah,
yeah, it's in a roll. Because you sop up the gravy with that.
Oh, you got your turkey. I gotta have some cranberry sauce, mashed potatoes, gravy. Definitely some sweet potatoes with marshmallows. No. Yeah. Pretty much anything else I don't really want at that point. Roll, nice dinner roll.
Or three. You know what? I'm gonna try the sweet potatoes with the marshmallows tomorrow because my girlfriend's making it. I saw her buy all the shit for it. I was like, "What are you buying marshmallows for?" I didn't even know what it was. So
good. It's really good. I'm gonna try some orange juice in there, brown sugar.
Yes.
Yeah. I will give my review next week.
Javi, what's on your plate?
Turkey. I like having a drumstick if possible. And I like a lot of slices of the white meat. Hopefully it's cooked well, so it's still pretty juicy. But then you got to cover that shit in gravy. And then you got your mashed potatoes, a big glob of it. And like Jeff, I'll set the corn next to my mashed potatoes. But, you know, I want them to get to know each other. So
Yeah,
that's right. And then cranberry sauce, you know, I never really had any of that growing up. I think sometimes we'd have it. But when it's there... Especially my in-laws, they make some pretty badass cranberry sauce that has some liquor in it. Rum, I think. Yeah.
Interesting.
Some good stuff. It keeps you warm. Have that with your turkey. Add a little flavor there. And then, most importantly, my favorite dessert, pumpkin pie. You got to end the day with pumpkin pie. And then just go take a nap.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, now everyone knows what we've eaten. Enjoy Black Friday and have a good holiday, everyone.
Yeah, I got to work holiday. Black Friday. Woo!
Oh.
Check out all the deals on Amazon, everybody.
I already have some deals in my cart. I bought some stuff over your podcasting.
Awesome. And if you see an ad on any social media network, click on it and my team will thank you.
All right.
Have a good one.
Yep. We'll be back next week. Jeff, say goodnight.
Good night.
Episode, where are we?
466.
666. 77. That
was Earl. Nope, way off.
Oh, I'm glad I did not go. You were closer than... Wait, Jeff just... Jeff just disappeared. All right, give him 1 second.
I invoked the devil. Jeff disappeared. I don't know.
Holy shit, dude. Right as Tony spoke, like, everybody... And I was like, did Tony fucking kill the room with some stupid joke? Or, like...
Yes.
What happened?
He did.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.